Hello there guys and welcome to another episode of Genuine Chit Chat. This week I'm once again joined by Scott Weatherly of the 20th Century Geek podcast and the Stories Out of Time and Space podcast. If you tuned in last week, you'll know that Scott was on then because that was part one of the chat, and this is continuing on that very nerdy discussion in the part two as well as finishing it off. Just a couple of bullet points of what we sort of talk about. We speak about crossovers in comics and movies and that sort of jazz, and directors being allowed to be more adventurous with their projects, issues of prequel movies and general cinematic and shared universes, early sci-fi work, video game movies, universes, internal logic, and loads of other things like that. So very much keeping in line with what part one was all about. It's just a big, amazing, nerdy talk. Scott has been on the show before. He was on episode 75 for a Star Wars discussion and on episode 89 for a wrestling talk. And also early 2021, myself, Scott and Megan are all going to be involved in a Batman retrospective. We've already recorded part one. I think it's going to be three parts. We're speaking about Batman 66, the Keaton Batman movies, then the other two in the 90s, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, as well as Masks of the Phantasm. And then we're going to talk about the Dark Knight trilogy. So make sure you subscribe to 20th Century Geek to get updated with those when they're all released. And things I'll post on social media and stuff as well, but just so in case you don't follow me on social media, then you'll still get the information. And really, that's about it from this sort of side. I've included links in the description to many other times that myself and Scott have collaborated, including when we are on the Comics on Trial episode, which is on the feed of Comics in Motion, where we argued about Phantom Menace, which was loads of fun. And there's lots of other cool things in the show notes too. So there's not going to be a promo today, so I'll just kind of let the show go on in a moment, but I will be back at the end to talk about what I've got coming up in the next few weeks, as well as my other podcast, Star Wars Comics in Canon, and a few other bits and pieces there. So, you know, be sure to follow me on social media at Genuine Chit Chat on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. And then all the other contact details of mine are in the show notes / description. Thank you so much for listening as always, guys. And yeah, I'll talk to you at the end. Welcome to Genuine Chit Chat, where we have honest conversations with interesting people. And I'm your host, Mike Burton.
No, they did Aliens first, because they did a follow-on from Aliens. They did the first sequel before Alien 3. They did a sequel to Aliens. And then they got the Terminator rights. And then they got the Predator rights. And they started to do those licensed comics. Those first batch of licensed comics, by the way, by Dark Horse, are absolutely phenomenal. They're very 90s, but they are awesome. Concrete Jungle, which is the first sort of like sequel to Predator, has a Schaefer brother. It's Dutch Schaefer arms watching his brother as a New York cop, and it's amazing. It obviously inspired Predator 2 and all this other stuff. But
Concrete Jungle, that was the video game, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You can like skin people and hang them from their intestines, yeah, and stuff. I used to love that game much.
PS2, yeah, it's great. It was obviously a Dark Horse. They were like, well, we've got this. Let's put them together. And so Dark Horse were the first one. They did like an Alien versus Predator comic, and the first comic's really good. And like I say, they've done it since. And IDW have sort of picked up the baton of late in the last couple of years, because they've got like Star Trek. They've got all the licensed comics now, like Star Trek, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Turtles, and all this other stuff. And so you've had even within their licensing, you've had a Ghostbusters. They've got Ghostbusters as well. The Ghostbusters series, which is probably one of my favourite go-tos at the moment, has crossed over with Ninja Turtles and Transformers in canon. In canon, within the Ghostbusters universe.
Oh my god!
They get referenced later in the ongoing series, like these special crossovers. They've crossed over the Turtles twice now. Actually, they've even crossed over with their own. The Ghostbusters of the comic universe have crossed over with the real Ghostbusters from the cartoon and stuff. It's amazing. But then they've had like G.I. Joe and Transformers. They had Ninja Turtles and there was something else they did. But then you've had they've gone out and gone, do something DC? Yeah, we will. All right. Well, you've now got Ninja Turtles and Batman.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah. You've got Green Lantern and Star Trek. they've just gone, as you said, wouldn't this be cool?
That's what I love about comics. I mean, there's a comic actually, it's one of the few sort of Marvel comics that aren't Star Wars I've actually read. And there's a series called Marvel Zombies, which are incredible. They're really, really cool. And they go into really in depth about the whole multiverse, you know, because you've got one multiverse where they were zombies and then they managed to make a machine, the Fantastic Four zombies make a machine into a non-zombie yes. universe. And then it's them fighting. And there's one comic crossover special and it's with Ash from the yes. Evil Dead. It's the cool, you're watching Ash from the Evil Dead being attacked by a zombie Howard the Duck. And you're like, yeah. can this be any fucking cooler?
Yeah.
Like, who is the cool, one of the coolest zombie killers in the world? Well, obviously it's Ash from the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness. And it's just like, why don't we just put him in a comic where he fights zombie Spider-Man? You're like, yes,
yeah,
it's so cool.
It is. And that's what I love about these things, that they just they can do it in comics because it sort of costs less to do it. And if it doesn't work, all right, well, we did six issues and we won't visit that again. But like some of those crossovers, I mean, Batman seems to have crossed over with everybody, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Batman's crossed over. Batman has fought, he's fought both Alien and Predator, you know. He's had multiple encounters with Judge Dredd. He's had multiple encounters with the Turtles now. You know, you can do these things. And weirdly, DC has done it more than most. Like DC, Marvel did Marvel Zombies, but that's, again, it's not their 616 universe. Like, it's not a main protagonist. They seem quite intent on protecting theirs. But DC seem a bit more open to it. Like you say, Green Lantern, the first Green Lantern Star Trek run, the six-issue story, is really good. I mean, it ends with the destruction of the DC universe. So it starts with the destruction of the DC universe, and a bunch of lanterns of different colors end up in the Star Trek universe.
Wow!
And then the Enterprise is in its Next Generation. No, is it Next Generation? I can't remember now. It might be Next Generation. But basically, they end up fighting over rings, and some of the crew get rings and stuff. So.
Oh, wow.
It's, yeah, and you're thinking, like, as you're like, that's a really cool idea. Let's do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, I love the fact that they can do that. And, I love a good crossover. When it's good, they're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the most underrated things. And I think one of the things about comics is there's quite a few people I know who are really into, you know, Star Wars or, you name it, Marvel Cinematic Universe, any of those things. And then I occasionally will go, oh, have you read any of the comics? And I get this response quite a bit, which is, I'm not really a comic book person. And I don't normally argue with that because it's normally a wasted effort almost. But it's like, you just haven't really read the right comics.
Mm.
Like, it's like saying, oh, I'm not really into music at all. Yeah. It's like, what? So you think classical and death metal are basically the same. It's like,
yeah.
So you could read a Hello Kitty comic if you want, but you could also read, you know, the Alien Predator crossover and all these. And it's like, there's such a wide variety. And it's one of the things that I found when I started doing Star Wars comics and canon, which was... A friend of mine actually got me into Star Wars comics because he saw these from a birthday or something. He got me these three really cool variant covers of a character called Dr. Aphra. Mm. And she's only in comics at the moment. She's basically like Indiana Jones, but more morally ambiguous, kind of a bit more morally bankrupt. And she's a great character. She's one of the coolest characters probably in all of Star Wars, and she's only in the comics.
Mm.
And they're starting to... They made an audiobook about it recently, so there's a lot of rumours she's going to get her own series soon and stuff. But it's like, the Star Wars comics... So many of the storylines in there are better than so many other places. And it's like when people watch Rise of Skywalker or whatever and they're disappointed by it, and I'm like, I understand, but like in the same year that Rise of Skywalker came out, you had The Mandalorian, which I think more than made up for it.
Mm.
But then there's so many comics in Star Wars which are so cool. But the problem is, if I say to someone, I didn't like the prequels very much, well, I've got a Darth Vader comic, 25 runs, it will add a lot of depth to the Anakin character. People go, yeah, but I don't, the prequels are shit, I don't want to watch that, I don't want to waste time reading this comic. And it's like, but it's one of those weird things I've said, it's kind of nerd culture in a lot of the times, and Megan's been discovering this where she's been getting into Star Wars a lot more, and it's like, it's with a lot of things, is the more content you take in, the better it gets, which sounds stupid and to begin with, but it's almost like, yeah, the Star Wars films, the 11 of them, some of them are amazing, some of them are okay, there's a couple of a bit of crap in a sense, but it's like, then you go deeper, you go the series, most of the series are pretty cool, but then you go the books. Pretty much all the books are bestsellers. They're almost all rated really well because all they've done is they've got someone who's really... There's the thing with comics and books is like, when you get someone who's an insanely good writer, who's got an idea of a storyline in your head, realistically, they just get... They contact Disney and go, look, or Lucasfilm, whatever, and they go, look, I've got this story. It's going to be in space. It's going to be about a pilot who, you know, there's an evil regime and they disappear out of it and they do something crazy and then this planet gets saved. And they go... Well, if you want, just call the main character Wedge Antilles, make sure that the year is this, and make sure Death Star's mentioned once or twice, but make sure these characters, if you put them in there, don't die. And there you go, that it fits in the canon. And it's like, well, this is a cool independent story. I read one, which is called Bloodline. It's about Princess Leia, like, 5 years before Force Awakens. Almost the entire book is just about the political system in the galaxy at the time.
Yeah.
So much of it is just about populists and centrists, about people who want centralized power and people want the power spread out more. And that's the majority of the book is just about politics in Star Wars, in this fictional universe. And it's like, if you change names in that, it would be a really cool one-off book about, it's almost in a way kind of like V for Vendetta in certain aspects. Ooh. Like, I know V for Vendetta, it's Alan Moore, and I think it's published by DC, I think.
It was released. Yeah. It was released in a magazine called Warrior, and then it was then the issue. It's complicated, but yes, DC then released it as a trade.
Yeah, exactly. That's why when I paused there, because I was like, I don't know enough about this, but I'm sure Scott does. It's things like that where, like, for example, V for Vendetta. It's a cracking. I really like it, and the film's brilliant. But it wouldn't really be. Alamo wouldn't let you do this, but like, it wouldn't really be that hard to kind of just tweak it and put in a character from the Marvel universe or the DC universe, and I'm not saying every single thing should have to be a crossover, but I feel like there's so much in an era where everyone's whinging about sequels and lack of originality and blah blah blah. It's like, why, instead of making 18,000 sequels of the same film, why don't you start making a few more crossovers? Let more independent people get the reins. Like, I think that's what sort of Disney and are starting to realise a bit more now, because with the MCU, there's a lot of cool films, but all the best rated ones are ones where they've let the directors have much more free reign. Primarily like Thor Ragnarok, that, you know, Taika Waititi went weird with that one, and it's probably one of the best Marvel films of all of them.
Yeah.
Apart from Endgame and Infinity War. I love that film. And now, because people like that so much, Taika Waititi is going to make a Star Wars film, which I'm excited about. But you go back 10 years or so, and there was that argument between Edgar Wright and Disney, because he wanted to make Ant-Man more Edgar Wright-esque, and they didn't really see eye to eye. And then you've got elements of Edgar Wright's Ant-Man within Ant-Man, like the bit where it's that really intense thing where they're fighting on the train tracks, and it's like really intense music and stuff. And then the train hits one of them, and then it zooms out, and it's obviously just a toy train, so it does no damage. Those little Edgar Wright moments are what make the film go from being a cool film to an amazing film, in my opinion. And I feel like, finally, hopefully, Disney is starting to learn, like, the music industry has a lot of this problem as well, where they go, look, we've been making money for however many years, you're a new creative individual, you've got some good ideas, send them to us, we'll tweak 80% of them, release it, it will do terribly, and then we'll blame you. And it's like, let people just do cool shit who are passionate.
The thing is, I think, it's... As you said before, though, it's about the money-making, isn't it? It's about the money. Disney are going to make money, and that's the driver. And I think the thing is, again, about the capitalist thing, it's about giving people what they want. But the MCU, movie studios learn the wrong lessons.
Hmm.
Right? We've seen this time and time again. Movie studios learn the wrong lesson. You know, and the MCU was lightning in the bottle. Right? You have Paul Feige, Kevin Feige, who leads it all. He's this sort of like head at the top. And he's, you know, you have this... the ability to have, every now and then you have flashes of individualism in there, but the majority of it sits together as a single universe, which is the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, so you can have like Ryan Coogler's sort of Black Panther, and he can, you know, use his unique voice in that respect. But do you know what? You can't do all this stuff because it's also got to stand next to Captain Marvel, you know, or it's got to then stand next to Doctor Strange. And you go, okay, so you've got these parameters to work within, but you can have your voice within that, and that's fine. And it worked for Disney, and it's made them an absolute fortune, and fair play to them. But then other studios looked at it and went, shared universe. Shared universe, that's what we want. So, you know, DC did it, and you sort of start with Man of Steel, which, look, Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman, they've got their problems, right? And I won't defend them to the hilt like many will. They're fine. But I wish Warner Brothers had basically kept its nuts and said to Zack Snyder, do what you're doing. Finish your story. And unfortunately, you know, he obviously had the horrendous family tragedy that meant he had to walk away from Justice League. I would have felt better if they'd have just said, we're putting the brakes on. You know, you go deal with that, come back, and we'll finish it, and you can do your story. Because I just get the feeling, I'm really looking forward to seeing what this HBO Snyder cut.
Snyder cut, yeah.
I'm not, you know, slathering over it like some people are. That's fine. That's them. That's their passion.
Yeah.
But like, if Warner Brothers had stuck to their guns with that, I think you'd have something really special at the end of it, you know, and they could build off that. But they didn't. And there's the same with, Who was it? Universal and the Dark Universe. Bloody hell.
Where did that go? Like, they released The Mummy that was atrocious. And well, I think they tried to leak.
There you go. You just answered your question, really. But the problem they had, they bit off more than they could chew. Because the first thing they released was a cast photo for the entire universe. So they released a photo. Here's Tom Cruise. Here's Russell Crowe. Here's Johnny Depp. Here's Angelina Jolie. Here's this person. Javier Bardem was in it. This massive cast, and you're thinking, wow, this is incredible. Look at all these people. They're in this. These are fantastic. And then they're like, yeah, we're going to have Angelina Jolie is going to be the bride of Frankenstein, and Javier Bardem's going to be, I forget what it was going to be, and Johnny Depp's going to be the Invisible Man. Oh, Javier Bardem, I think, was going to be the Wolf Man. Right. You think, oh, wow, cool, that sounds ace. And then you watch The Mummy and you go, yeah, that was shit.
Yeah, that was one of the worst films. When I saw that at the cinema, that was one of the worst films I've seen in a long time.
Exactly, and you sort of go, I'm sort of glad you didn't do that. But again, you watch that film and you think, why didn't that work? Well, firstly, because The Mummy is an adventure film. Like, the best Mummy film, to me, is the Brendan Fraser one from the 1990s. Love that film.
Incredible.
Incredible. Because the original film's fine. It works as a creepy horror film, the Universal one. But they took the wrong lesson because they went, what are we going to choose? Well, we need to have, like, a leader figure. All right, well, we're going to have Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character. We're going to introduce a shady network of agents. A bit like S.H.I.E.L.D., yes. And it's sort of like, you go, you don't do that. You want to give snippets. And so that's what I think, they just took the wrong lessons. And so I'd love to see some shared universes. I'd love to see a shared horror universe. I think it would be amazing. You mentioned Freddy versus Jason before. Like, that works because of the nods throughout the film. Like, it knows it's stupid. Like, that film knows it's really stupid. And it's made by Ronnie Yu, who also made Bride of Chucky. And they share a sort of an aesthetic, and it's great, and it's stupid, but it's really good fun. And so you sort of go, I'm enjoying this crossover because it's daft, and it's good. Yeah. It fits with both characters. But they just don't seem to get... When they want to get to a shared universe, they sort of go, well, I want to get to Avengers as quick as possible. You know, we basically want to get to the money shot as fast as possible, not thinking, no, you've got to reel people in. There's a film called American Werewolf in London.
Oh, yes. And it's got some of the best special effects.
It's incredible.
It's like the photo, and then they add a tiny bit of makeup, and then the photo, and then a tiny bit. I know what film. Yeah.
There's two bits. Like, yeah, there's the transition. You see his hand stretch and all this other stuff. It's incredible. But the other thing, he's got a friend, Jack. David Kessler is the main character. He's the werewolf. And he's got a friend, Jack. They're both attacked on the moors, and Jack starts to decompose throughout the film because no one else can see him. He's like a ghost, but he decomposes. And it's so well done. I mean, I watched it way too young. It gave me freaking nightmares, like incredible nightmares. But it's awesome. I love it. Arrow did a release a version of it last year that's like a big, like a nice slip case and the whole works. Wonderful. Anyway, in that film, there's a scene where Jack first comes to meet David. He comes back from the dead, and there's a great look. He's got a little bit of skin flapping and all this other stuff. It's gross. But he says in there, he says, David, like, we didn't know. He says, that was a werewolf that attacked us. You know, I'm the undead. In the next full moon, you're going to become a werewolf and you're going to kill people. The only way for you to save those people is for you to kill yourself. And it's sort of like, it's really well done. And he says, he says, everything you've heard of, all that shit out there, all that supernatural, it's real. And all in my head, like, for years, I've never noticed that line. And I watched it when I was watching the Arrow version. And I was like, that line, to me, that is the way you start a shared universe. Yes. You have American Werewolf in London, and there's this snippet going, yeah, do you know what else is out there? Fucking everything. You don't see it, but it's out there. And then the next, you know, because, I mean, David Kessler, the werewolf, is killed at the end. It's really tragic. It's a fantastic film. Highly recommend it. But there's a characters that are left alive that you go, oh, they become the ones that appear later in the shared universe. You know,
yeah.
And you can do things like And it's that drip feeding of things I'd love to see. Like, that's how I'd do it as a shared universe. I would start with that and build from there.
It's exactly as you say. It's the brilliant thing about all the early Avengers movies, Iron Man, Thor, I'm not the biggest fan of Captain America 1. It did a lot of things right. It's a very clever, very good movie, but it just didn't click with me the same way. But what Marvel did the best, which is exactly what you said, the other studios are learning the wrong lessons, is that what they did is they released standalone films that work incredibly together, but have the odd character, Nick Fury being the main one, have the odd character here and there that just exists. Mm. And then there's little subtle references to things that happened, and it does it so well and so cleverly. And as you said, they're trying to create an end game in, like, a certain movie series want to create an end game in 5 years. It's like, the reason you can't do that is because it took
11 years.
Yeah, exactly. It took that long and so many films, so many pieces together, and it means a different amount to different people. Mm. Some people have just seen a couple of Iron Man films, the odd Thor film, maybe like Ant-Man, and then the main Avengers films and Endgame. And it's still a great fun film. But other people, like yourself and me and other more nerdy people, have seen, all of the films. Mm. But then you've got people, all the films and the Netflix series, which references. And then there's obviously comics, which slightly different universes, but you know what I mean? It's all these different things. It's like, with The Mummy, I remember watching it and I remember hearing they're going to do this dark universe thing, and I was like, I have a bad feeling about this, ironically. and you watch it and you're like, half this film is them basically advertising their own franchise. And it's just like, Russell Crowe is in it so much, talking about all this special society and stuff, and it's just naff bollocks. Yeah. You just don't care about. But if they had him in it for 5 minutes, just a one-off scene, and then he's gone.
Mm.
And that was it. And then maybe you could do... I don't like post-credit scenes much anymore because they're getting quite annoying to have to look up a film before I go to the cinema to check if there's a post-credit scene now, because if it's, Birds of Prey or something and it's connected... Does it not? I don't know. I have to find out. But it's like, you have to do it where you have to create a film that is strong enough to stand by itself and sprinkle bits on it that connect with other stuff. And then once you've got five films that have got this sprinkling of stuff in, you can use one film to kind of connect them together, and then... That you leave that film, then you do another 5, 6, 7 films that are all independent. Because the problem what movie studios are trying to do too quick, I think, a lot of the time, is they go, people want a big universe. Let's do a schedule of 5 films that are going to come out in 5 years, and yeah, people are going to see the first one and love them all. But what Marvel did, kind of, probably almost stumbled in it in a way, but what they did cleverly was, some of the films aren't that amazing, but what's good about it is that the other films don't rely so much on them. So therefore, if you watch Thor 2 and you go, man, Thor 2 is not a good film. I don't mind it, but it's like, Thor 2 is a bit crap. Don't like that. So, okay, you watch Thor 3, it's completely fucking different.
Yeah.
You watch Captain America, any of them, they're not even slightly like Thor at all. You watch Doctor Strange, it's not like really any of the other films in a lot of ways. And they're all independent, but they're in the same universe. And I think that's one of the things that Star Wars, because obviously now Kevin Feige is getting more heavily involved in the Star Wars universe and stuff. Now they've gone, hey, maybe we shouldn't have released a new trilogy and not figured out what the fuck we were doing at the start. And let's make films reactionary to people's to what people think. Force Awakens was too safe. Let's make Last Jedi that's really weird and different. Oh no, people think it's too weird and different. Let's make Rise of Skywalker the fucking same. It's like, don't react to people. Just have a plot. Anyway, but what they're doing now with Star Wars, what they're kind of realizing is they're going, okay, we'll make this series about Mandalorian. It works if you know what's happened in the films.
Yeah.
But it's completely independent. All you need to know is the Empire are bad people and they're not really around anymore. That's all you... Some people have magic powers. That's it.
And you pretty much get that in the first 15 minutes of the first episode. And you go like...
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. Move on. Excellent.
100%. And it's what they're starting to do, because obviously I'm really deep in the world, so I hear rumours here, there and everywhere about stuff, and they're releasing Star Wars Squadrons, and there's a story mode, which is canon, and Fallen Order was canon, and there's a story of Battlefront 2. That was canon. But you could do these multiplayer things, which are fun, which aren't canon, because it would be impossible to do so.
Mm.
But that's the fun of it. And with Star Wars, what they're going to try and do is they're going to release, I think, there's rumours of like a crime syndicate underworld series thing, which is going to be like a sequel to Solo in some way, but more so about the criminals. That will be really cool because you can watch that and know fuck all about Star Wars. And it's the starting point. I think the point I'm trying to make is what the good thing into Star Wars is what they've done now, especially with Mandalorian and a few other things, is that you can really, as long as you watch the first film in the trilogy, I'd say, apart from that, you can really start anywhere you want. If you start with the Mandalorian, you can still love Star Wars. There's people who play the games and first got into Star Wars through video games. And you need to make it so that each film, or each whatever you want, each part of the media of this universe you're creating, if each of them is strong enough by itself, but also can act as like a slightly cracked open doorway of the potential, then you've got it. But that takes time and effort and trusting independent people, not having, you know, the corporate hand greedily going like, oh, well, we need this to be a 12, because you know what happens, you know, any film that is a 15 actually statistically makes less money. And then, you know, Ryan Reynolds leaks the Deadpool footage, people go mental, and now Deadpool's like one of the best-selling, highest-grossing R-rated films ever made.
Yeah.
Because they did what they should have done, rather than going thinking about their wallet too much, which is what you said earlier.
This is it. And I think some of them have done better than others, because I think one of the weird ones is the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, I've seen most of them.
Yeah. Well, it was never intended to be a universe, like a shared universe. Mm-hmm. Like, they did The Conjuring, and they were like, well, it made a bunch of money. Like, it cost us, like, you know, 25, 30 million. It's made hundreds of million. We'll make a second one. And they did. And then, you know, they go, well, you know that doll that was in it? Right, we're going to do an Annabelle movie. And the first one's not great. The second one's Annabelle Creation is actually really good. You know, and then they do, all right, we'll do another one of those. And you go, they go, oh, well, there's actually this other thing we keep talking about, this demon, this nun demon. You know, we'll do a story about that in the 50s. And we'll have one character at the very end that shows up that, you know, links you then to not to the main universe, but links you to Annabelle, which is then linked to the main universe, and sort of like, because the nun demon is linked to the main universe. You think, like, they're not looking to do an Avengers film. That's the thing with Blumhouse. They've gone, yeah, we're not going to do, you know, like you say, all the demons aren't going to come together and then the, you know, they're going to fight them. It's going to be a case of, like, we just know we live in these people exist in this crazy supernatural world, and these stories just keep happening, and we're going to drop them in. You think, like, and you, as you said, just make a passing reference. You know, you just need a character or a reference to something that tells you it's in the same world. And you go, oh, that's really cool. That's all I need. And then you can build up if you wanted. It's the same with prequels. I hate prequels, you know, and I'm excluding the Star Wars 3, because they had an agenda they had to fulfill. Yeah. Solo is a good example of, they go, we know, you know, the character that existed at the start of Star Wars. Yeah, yeah. We've got to answer every question about him in a single film. In one adventure, he's going to get his name, he's going to meet Chewbacca, he's going to get the Millennium Falcon and his gun.
And meet Lando.
And meet Lando.
And do the castle run. Everything about who he is that you get is all in that. It's a very good way of putting it. I didn't think about that.
It's like they've sat through Star Wars and gone, right, what things does he talk about? This, and this. Create the checklist. One film. It's like, did you, everything you own right now, did you get it in one go? No. And that happens with prequels, though. That's the sort of problem. It's one of the reasons I like Rogue One as a better prequel, is because, again, it has this one simple objective. Is, right, here's the story of how these plans got in the hands of Princess Leia. None of the characters actually have any impact on the rest of the film, which is why the film's so tragic, and it's actually a really good film. But when you try and do a prequel to a main character, it's like they've got to keep forcing stuff in, you know? And so it gets irritating.
No, I agree, and it's one of those things that when, like, I even said it with the Star Wars prequels, is it's one of those things where I'd rather have sequels more than prequels in almost any element, and video games are the worst. You have a video game prequel, and it never really works, because you're like, oh, we need new mechanics in the game. Okay, how are we going to make that work? It's a prototype gun. Woo! Yeah. It's like, well, it seems to work perfectly fine in this every single conceivable way. It's even better than anything that's ever existed, but it's just magically never mentioned again and disappears. It's like, so it's like, and with obviously, as you say, with the Star Wars universe, George Lucas did, after releasing the original trilogy, had some sort of vague idea of what he wanted to do, because he did vaguely mention the Clone Wars, so he probably had some amount of idea. But obviously we had that discussion where I do not believe that George Lucas had 9 films mapped out in his head when he made the original Star Wars, because he didn't. You couldn't tell, because there's so many glaring plot holes. But when they made the prequels, you say, they had an agenda, and it's flawed in certain ways because of, I'm not going to go to the deep dive of Star Wars and what the flaws about the prequels, but it works in itself, I think, enough to be okay. But when you have other prequels, it you get it where it's like, well, all these characters, like Solo, you watch it and I enjoyed Solo, but it took me a couple of watches to enjoy. But it's like, well, you know Han and Chewie aren't going to die, and you know the Falcon's going to be fine. So immediately you've got 3/4 of the whole film of what you care about, and Lando as well. You know nothing really that bad can happen to them. You can't have, you know, unless they get a fairly bad gunshot wound, you can't have Solo being clawed to, or near clawed to death by something, because he has no scars at all. Mm. So there's all these little problems. But if you do Rogue One, as you say, where, yeah, the end of the film connects like a little jigsaw piece to the start of The New Hope. But apart from really the brief brief Tarkin, brief Vader, and brief Leia appearances, and you know, the couple of other tiny side characters, it's its own film.
Mm,
and I think that's one of the big things. And it's why when they make these big universe films, it is just like, when they start making prequels of stuff and going back in time, it's like, do you really have to either do what Star Wars are doing now, which is doing the High Republic, which is 200 years before Phantom Menace, which is brilliant because apart from Yoda, no one's going to be about.
Yeah.
So as long as they don't have Yoda on screen every five fucking minutes, as long as he's in it, maybe because it's going to start, there's two books and the comic books, two comic book series that are coming out. If they have Yoda vaguely be in it enough so you notice him, but not a central character, that'll work really well. If they come out and say, hey, we're doing a Yoda movie, I'm just like, oh, can we not? Like, I've seen enough. I like Yoda, but I've seen, he's 900 fucking years old. He's going to be in probably every Star Wars film ever made ever and everything. Like, it's, you know, he's not literally, but you know what I mean? And it's one of those things where I'm hopeful for the future that movie studios are gonna create enough fuck ups of Dark Universe and Monster Universe and all, you know, that sort of thing, and they're gonna go, okay, we need to reevaluate, we need to try and do crossovers
and
fingers crossed we'll get there one day.
Yeah, well, one thing, but you know, before we talk some, you know, we've been talking for a while, I don't waste your whole evening, but one of the things we talk about, sort of you talk about crossovers and shared universes, is that, you know, they're not new. The other thing as well is we talk about them like they're new, and obviously they've been happening in comics for years, and they've had DC Marvel crossovers, and you know, when DC owned the Shadow, they've crossed over and all this other stuff. So, but there's a couple of sort of that just popped into my head that are worth mentioning. There's almost like a what's called like a pre-pulp shared universe. So there's a guy called Philip Jose Farmer who he's a novelist, sci-fi novelist, and he took the idea of saying, like, you know, Tarzan, he's cool. You know, Sherlock Holmes, he's cool. And he collected all these characters together from this sort of pre-pulp and early pulp era, and basically said, like, they all come from a single event. So basically, there was a meteor that landed in and a small English village in the mid 1800s, and whilst it was there, it radiated this chemical or radiation or whatever sort of thing, Fantastic Four style, and basically created these like early metahumans. And so this one event, so in it, the meteorite lands, and there's a carriage going past, and in it is the Earl of Greystoke, who obviously becomes is the father of Tarzan. And then these other, then you link them all off, and you spider webs out, and you find out that like this one event caused Sherlock Holmes to have superior intelligence. So his intelligence is almost like a superpower, and you know, Tarzan luckily has super endurance, which is why he's able to survive in the jungles and blah blah blah. And it reaches up to like the Shadow, Doc Savage, and these other characters. And there's these novels, and none of the characters are ever really front and center. But like, there's other stories, and they're referred to as other things. So, you know, I don't think he ever says Doc Savage, but he says, oh, yeah, the Man of Bronze, and, you know, all these other things. And so this universe, and they're really cool books where, like, these things have happened. Like, Captain Nemo's in there as well. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, so there's all these really cool characters. And they sort of, the series of, like, I think it's like six or seven novels, and they focus in on bits and pieces. But that was from the 70s. So I think the sort of 60s and the 70s. And that's really cool. But even before that, one of the people you sort of mentioned, you know, what we sort of started talking about for this was H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
So, you know, Lovecraft, we won't talk about him. He's an interesting and complicated individual that...
I did want to, but yeah, I will say we'll do another podcast where one of the notes was to talk about him, but we got sidetracked in the best way.
He's a complicated individual.
Yes.
But his thing was, like, he created, obviously... The Cthulhu mythos, as it's called now, and he wasn't a hugely popular writer during his life, but he was also completely open to other people just using his stuff, you know. So, and he was always like a mentor, like, to people like Robert Bloch, who obviously wrote Psycho, Robert E. Howard, who created Solomon Kane and Conan the Barbarian, and all these other writers. that he was corresponding with, and they'd be like, "Yeah, can I use like the Cthulhu mythos? Can I make up a demon, or can I use this? You know, you've talked about Yogg-Sothoth. Can I use that? Oh yeah, go for it. Just make sure you use what's gone before. Yeah, go for it." And this Cthulhu mythos is literally, you know, the big one is the Necronomicon, you know, the book that just appears and appears and appears. And it's sort of like, you know, you talked about protecting that property. And he was all about like, no, just go for it, you know, write this stuff. And so some of the best modern or best Cthulhu mythos stuff come after his death, you know, and I love his books. I do love his stories. But the stories by sort of like... By Robert E. Howard's done something else. They've blocked in a few, but Doraleth, I forget his name, but Lord Dunsany and these other characters and these authors of the time that wrote these stories that you sort of go, yeah, they're really good. And they're really sort of like, you know, they really sort of tap into that Cthulhu mythos. And again, like some of them full on, you know, like you'll get people that take on Cthulhu, or they'll come across one of the ancient, you know, the elder gods or something. But then there's others where it's a Lovecraftian tale, you know, of sort of ancient secrets being untold. But then a character, they'll come across like the character of Charles Dexter Ward, or, you know, these other characters. Randolph Carter is another one that sort of like was a reoccurring character that just pops up at some points in other stories. And it's sort of like, it's just really cool that, there's almost like a Lovecraftian sensibility that people have just gone, yeah, I'm just going to plug into that and then, you know, and grow it. And that became this weird sort of like, you said about the MCU, you know, I don't think he cared really, but this idea of letting them take the core element and then letting them do their own thing with it, but with the parameters in place.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the key reasons that Lovecraft is still known today. If he hadn't have done that, like, you wouldn't know who he was. He'd have been forgotten.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a really cool shared universe because it's crossed over to, I don't know if it's canon, but throughout, like, the 40s and 50s, like, you know, the Shadow, other pulp characters sort of jumped on the bandwagon and went on it. And, like, it's just cool. But you can go back as far as that, like, the shared universes and stuff just, you know, just... it's a natural thing I think we do as creators.
Yeah.
Where you start to...
It's collaboration, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That level of collaboration and encouragement for them to do that was really cool. So, and I think, you know, I have a theory that the majority of modern horror has at least some part of Lovecraft in it.
Mm.
You know, if you follow it back, I mean, you know, Stephen King says it openly that that's what he's influenced by. And if you read things like It, or even like things like Tommyknockers have got that sort of, you know, that sort of element in it. Clive Barker, you know, Christ, you can hardly hide it, to be honest.
Yeah. It's a weird one with the shared universe. One of the things that because a friend of mine, one of the reasons I brought up Lovecraft to you, which we'll have another chat about in depth another time, but because my mate Reese, who's been on the show, he was on the first ever Genuine Chit Chat, actually, he is recently, the last few months, he's been really getting into Lovecraft. And he was talking to me about it, and he's like, the majority of Lovecraft stuff is actually just short stories. And I didn't know much about Lovecraft, and he gave me a bit of insight. And he's like, so much of it is short stories, and he was like, it's written in this really specific way, and there's all these little bits that interconnect. There's just like loads and loads and loads of stories that are set in one universe, and not even, most of them don't have anything to do with the other one. But there's like, as you say, like there's just a character who is almost like walks past them in the street, and it just so happens in another short story that's written God knows how long after that, and in chronologically speaking in the story, he walks past that random person and then goes and does this little thing. And it's, I think, with being in the nerd culture, one of the things that the MCU did so right is subtle nods. And it's like, when you're a nerd and you've absorbed all the, like, when I keep bringing back to Star Wars because it's the one I know the most, but like whenever I watch the Star Wars films, and I've got Megan doing it now as well, there's Phantom Menace, there's a scene where there's a bounty hunter called Aurra Sing who shoots, she doesn't shoot actually, she's just watching the pod racing. She's on screen for about 2 seconds, I think, and then she's a character in the Clone Wars series, and then she gets mentioned in Solo and blah blah blah. But like, me watching, when I watched The Rise of Skywalker or any of the newer ones, when I was really into Star Wars, there's certain characters that pop up that you see in the background or stuff like that, that to most people It doesn't affect them. They don't even notice. But just because you've given that character a certain tattoo on their face, or you've given them a certain colour arm or specific weapon on their belt, you just doing that tiny attention to detail makes a difference from being like, hey, look, there's loads of pointless background characters doing fuck all while the main character's being all quippy, to, oh, all of those characters, they have their own story. Mm. They've got that. You don't necessarily know their story, but they're real. And I think that's one of the things, when I've spoken to individuals who are older than myself, who are around when Star Wars was getting released, one of the things that a lot of people have said is every single character in Star Wars has some sort of name. You could get an action figure of everyone. And that was one of the things that people start to love about it, because you're like, I've got the action figure of Imperial Officer Vellum or something. When's he in it? He's in Empire Strikes Back for 1 second when you see the hologram of him be blown up. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what I think they need to do with nerd culture, is rewarding nerds for noticing the connections, while also not trying to alienate people who aren't nerds by being too deep into it.
It's a really fine balance. Really fine balance. And it's, because you do, if you go too much towards nerd culture, like, it won't land, because, like you say, your regular Joe just looks at it and is like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. But if you go the other way, you alienate the nerd culture, and you get, weirdly, you get nerd rage, which puts off the regular Joe.
Well, yeah, it's basically video game movies are basically the big. They seem to not be able to really do video game movies almost at all. They seem to fuck them up completely, because they advertise it and things are like, oh yeah, if you get made for the best selling video game, the new Tomb Raider or whatever films, there's lots of them, and you go, okay. So the people who love the games go and watch it, and they go, this is nothing like anything, like the games at all. And all the people see the trailer go, well, I never played the game, I'm not going to go watch that, why do I care? Yeah. And then you just get this thing where no one gives a fuck.
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, I think, like you say, it's a computer game movies are an odd one, because I've watched a few, one of the weirdest ones, I mean, weirdly, I watched Sonic recently. I watched Sonic the Hedgehog.
I haven't seen that yet. Is it any good?
It's good fun. Like,
that's what I've heard a lot of people say.
It's sort of like, it takes the bare elements of it's probably one of the most successful computer game movies, because all it is Sonic. Like, you haven't I haven't got a great deal invested in it. I played it loads when I was a kid, but I don't need to see it in a certain way. So it works, for what it is. But I think back to like when they first did them, and they were really confused. Like, they did. I don't know if you've seen it, Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins and John.
I've seen a lot of footage about it and things. And I've seen a lot of clips, but I'm not strong enough to watch the whole film.
Yeah, I've got it on Blu-ray. it's not a good film, but it's one of those that you do sort of like, you almost like hate watch it. You watch it, you go, this is dreadful, but there's bits in it that are quite good. Like, Dennis Hopper's in it as King Cooper, but he's not, he only becomes a dinosaur at the end. And you're like, this is weird. and then they did Street Fighter. Jean-Claude Van Damme is supposed to be sort of Guile, who's the true American, and he's sort of like, he's still talking at the mustard from Brussels, and you're like, this doesn't work. Like, there are other people that could have done this. But computer game films are an interesting one, because, if you go back to what we've said about, like, if you had someone like Kevin Feige that could do it, that could figure out the way he did it, like, you would make an absolute fortune, tell a good story that people want to invest in. But for some reason, they can't seem to do it with computer game films. I don't know. No. What did you think of the last Tomb Raider one?
I use Tomb Raider as an example, even though I haven't seen it. I've seen the Angelina Jolie ones, I haven't seen the newest Tomb Raider. I'm trying to think. Some of the video... The most recent video game movie I saw, actually, was Assassin's Creed, and that is horrendous. That it's so... Like, I couldn't stand that film. But the problem is that... the reason it's such a tightrope, I'd never want to make a video game movie, because with certain games and films and things, like, I know the Witcher series is quite popular, but it's like, you have to make it so that you can rely. I mean, the Witcher was a book before the game anyway, but you have to make it so that it's strong enough by itself, but it references, but also with certain games, the fun is actually playing it. Like, yeah. A Grand Theft Auto movie wouldn't make any sense because it's just life.
Mm.
But the thing that's fun about Grand Theft Auto is the fact that you can go around, you can, you know, shag a prostitute, kill her, take your money back, and go and take on the entire, you know, New York police force or whatever in a fucking Corvette with a machine gun. And you can do... That's ridiculous. No one should ever try and do that. But to play it in a game, it's fun and silly.
Mm.
Then you get other games that are, like, quite hyper-realistic games, like Uncharted and... Maybe games like Tomb Raider could fit into that sort of, the newer Tomb Raiders could kind of fit into that sort of category, but it has to be the thing of where you have to be watching someone doing it that's really cool, but it's not so ridiculous that it doesn't make sense. And that's kind of what I found about Assassin's Creed. I was like, I've played a fair amount of the games and I quite enjoy them, but I went and saw it because I had Odeon Limitless, so me and my mate just went to all films that were vaguely interesting. Most weren't. Most were quite crap. But like, you're watching it and it's like, even with my knowledge of the games, so much of it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't connect, because video games, when you're playing a video game, there's the suspension of disbelief, because you're like, yeah, none of this makes any sense because I'm playing a game.
Mm.
But when you do that into a film, unless the film is fantasy or sci-fi a lot of the time, or horror, if you're trying to make a film like Assassin's Creed, oh no, it's real, but it's not real. Oh, so they've got all these really random parts that it doesn't make sense because the universe they're trying to portray it in is this realistic universe, but then you're doing all these things that aren't realistic, so you're just like, none of it lands.
It's a bit like you say, the film needs to decide and then stick to its own internal logic.
Yes.
And so you sort of say, like, you know, there are certain ones that are quite, you know, it's interesting because, like you say, you look at Disney tried their hand with Prince of Persia with Jake Gyllenhaal. And you think, why did that not work, but Pirates of the Caribbean did?
Mm.
You know, yeah, all right, yeah, Johnny Depp being Jack Sparrow, and there's a sort of a humour to that. But what's that's still a period piece that's got a whole adventure thing in it. And you're thinking, why do those two not work? Why did one work and the other didn't? It's the thing, like you say, it's that thing of, like, they have to adhere to the game's mechanics and the game's logic and all this other stuff. And you go, okay, that's fine when you're playing it. That's great. But why do you have to keep referencing this other stuff? Like, everyone else, the regular people don't care about, you know, don't get. And I just think the more realistic games become, the less they should be adapted.
Yeah.
You know, because they're an entertainment medium in and of themselves. You know, yes, they're a visual medium, but they're an interactive visual medium. That's the point. You know, and so I think, like, comics is easier because it's literally, you go, oh, look, storyboards.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's, you know, but again, you have to have a level of adaptation to make them work. Like, yes, Christopher Reeve's Superman works, and I love the Christopher Reeve Superman film mostly. And you can get away with a Lycra suit and stuff in the 70s because it's fine. But the joke from the first X-Men film still stands when Cyclops says to Wolverine, because you get in the leather outfits, he says, you go outside in these things? He says, what, do you want yellow Lycra? You know, and you sort of go, no, because you would
exactly.
Ridiculous. Wolverine might look cool on a comic book page in his, you know, his yellow Lycra and his blue pants and his, like, metal shoulder pads. But if you put Hugh Jackman in that, it would look ridiculous.
100%.
This level of adaptation again, but you create an internal logic that just says, oh, in this scenario, they're going to wear black leather, and we're going to have, you know, he's got Wolverine's is a really good one because it's black leather, but it's still got the diamond shape on his side, but it's almost inverted because it's got yellow piping and stuff. And there's little nods like that. You go, that's cool. I think that's really cool. And if you're going to do that with computer games, you've almost got to decide how far you're going to go.
It's almost like go full out and let's be this really wacky, off-the-wall, crazy film that nothing makes any sense, which is fine, because there are films like that. Or you go, no, this is going to be a realistic adaptation, so we're going to limit some of the things the character does. You can't go, this character can do everything it's ever done in the video games, but the world it's in doesn't allow that, because then you just get this weird... It's almost like the Uncanny Valley, but instead of how people look, it's of the reality of physics. Because I'll say probably my last point here, because it's getting late, is... With Star Wars, one of the things I hear people, it pisses me off quite a lot. If people say, I've seen it in, like, forums and things where people go, oh, in Star Wars, how does this happen, whatever? And then people give answers, whatever. And then people go, oh, well, it couldn't work like that in the universe because X, Y, Z. And then people go, there are space wizards in it, and therefore, how can you say anything would happen bad? Or they could do hype. And it's like, but in the universe, hyperspace is possible.
Yeah.
And it does actually have some degree of logic behind it in-universe. Outside of Star Wars, it's impossible to our current knowledge of and understanding of physics. But in there, they've discovered a way of how hyperspace can work. As long as they don't keep changing the rules of it, in-universe, that works. You can ask questions, and that's why in certain films when things happen, and even if it is a superhero movie, I've heard people say the same things about the Avengers movies, and certain plot holes happen, and you go, you know, how is it that that character has done this and does that? And then people go, well, in the last Iron Man film, he did this and this. Clearly, it's not grounded in reality. It's like, no, but it's in a universe, yeah, and that universe has a degree of rules. Once you don't allow there to be consistent rules in a universe, it stops being a universe. It just becomes this clusterfuck.
Yeah, I agree. Internal logic is so important for a film and for a franchise. I mean, you said the same. In bloody Star Trek, they'll go like, go to warp 9. Right, so you're telling me you can travel 9 times faster than the speed of light. Is that what you're saying with this? Like, you know, no, of course you can't. It's not possible. But it's been consistent throughout, from the OG Star Wars, Star Trek, through to now. Warp speed is consistent. Everyone just accepts it. It makes no sense. Teleportation, you know, is in like Star Trek, makes no sense. Replicators, but they've been there since the beginning and they've maintained an internal logic. So you go, oh yeah, that's how it just works in Star Trek. You know what you're saying? Doesn't make any sense, but it works in Star Trek. Like, if that was then to turn up, if out of nowhere, Data in TNG could fly, you know what I mean? All of a sudden, like, oh, we're 3 seasons in, it's getting boring, let's make him fly. Well, that makes no sense. And all of a sudden, you've taken me out of the universe. Like, this is rubbish now. But if from the off, you go, right, we've now got a character that can do this. Like you said, we've got a character that can tap into the Force, and that's how they manipulate things around them, like, you know, people's minds, or they can levitate things. And there's a group of people that do that, and then you maintain that. All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. Like I say, unfortunately, and that's what Kevin Feige has done there. That's what I was saying before. He's fixed the parameters and says, you can do whatever you want, but within this. And then when you write the script, you come to me, and I'll tell you what you can and cannot do.
Exactly.
You know.
I 100% agree.
And that's why the MCU is so successful, as well as the fact, like, all the merchandising and everything else they've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one of the reasons I think sort of Star Wars has been quite successful, apart from some... But it's one of the things they did, I personally feel, that was lacking from the sequel trilogy. The prequel trilogy I've got my own problems with, but at least it keeps an internal logic for the majority of the time, because it's all Lucas. Not all good, but it's internal logic. But the problem with the last one was this lack of internal logic. Right, what are we do? You can now have force healing. Okay, well, we're going to show you that in the last film. All right, And then you can have all this other stuff that, like, you know, I know these other people have been trained for years to do this, but Rey can do this. You know, so like, oh, I'm trying to shoehorn in this and this, and it's a shame, because I think it should have worked. But they say you maintain that internal logic. The Conjuring universe is the same thing. Seriously, they've got it better than Star Wars. You maintain an internal logic. What does this character... Annabelle's a good example. The first film is dreadful. The second one's good, and the third one was all right. But there must have been a temptation in that third film, because the third film is a bit like a catch-all for sort of like monsters in the house, right? And Annabelle, that little doll, right? There must have been a temptation at some point to have her go full Chucky. No, she doesn't do that, because the doll is never alive. The doll is a vessel for this other thing. So it's always the creepy doll. Don't change that. That's the rules. If they'd have done that with the third film, and all of a sudden she was running around with a knife or doing some shit, then I'd have been like, do you know what I mean? You'd be like, all right, well, if that's the way this works, anything goes, it's all up in the air, I'm done.
100%.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that.
Yeah, that is a very good point. Yeah. I mean, Scott, I feel like we could talk about... we haven't even touched basically any of the notes. I think the whole point of sitting down was, I was like, I want to talk to Scott about H.P. Lovecraft, but we got distracted by talking about podcasts. I didn't even ask... I'm not going to ask it now. No. Find that out another episode. But I was going to ask about, like, how you first got into podcasting. But if we start that now, we'll be here for all day. So I'll end it here before we end up having any other conversations.
You should get me and your friend on together, and we'll chat Lovecraft and...
To be fair, actually, he may end up doing that. I want to potentially get him on my 100th episode, just because I don't want to do some giant 100th episode thing, because quite frankly, it's now on episode 96 or something, and I've left it far too late, and I can't really be asked to try and orchestrate some giant thing. So instead, I'm going to try and go, hey, Reese, you were on the first episode. Do you want to come in on the 100th? Yeah. And that's going to be my 100th episode, if I can pull my finger out to get that done. My 50th episode was a collaboration. I made it look like it was a big special thing, but it just happened that on that release, it was the collaboration, so I could kind of market it as such. But yeah, I'll definitely have you on again in the future. This has been riveting, and it's obviously by our previous collaborations and things, it's become very obvious that we could just chat about anything for hours. So before we hang up, I'll put links in the description and stuff, but if you just want to remind people where people can find you and your two podcasts, and we'll hang up.
Yeah, so find me. I'm on Twitter, on all the things. I'm on at Scott Weatherly. I'm also at 20th Century Geek. And for Stories Out of Time and Space, it's at Pod Time Space. The podcasts are 20th Century Geek, which is me looking at all things geeky and nerdy across the 20th century. That could be films, comics, books, the works, anything basically I decide I want to talk about. And Pod Time Space Stories Out of Time and Space is me and Julian Darius talking about different sci-fi films. So we're doing seasons. We've done season one, and we did an epic Red Dwarf review. So we've done everything Red Dwarf. We've got seasons 11, 12, and Promised Land to go yet to be released. And then we've just started recording season two. So it's all a bunch of sci-fi films, all of it fun. I highly recommend it. We found on all podcast catchers, iTunes, Spotify, the work. So just go find us. And if you like it, leave a review. That's another important thing.
Yeah, I always try and harp that home. I think I don't have as many reviews as I have episodes. I think I've got half. So I think every two episodes I release, I'll get one person review, which it's a fair enough, actually. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah, I completely agree. I mean, your show, both of your shows are brilliant, and it's one of the many reasons we've collaborated in the past, why this episode's happened, and why there'll be more to come in the future. So it's been a genuine pleasure to have you on, Scott. We'll definitely do this again in the future about umpteen things we can talk about, and there's maybe a thing in the works quietly, similar to the Star Wars collaboration that we're contemplating, aren't we?
We don't want to put any details, but
maybe... Maybe we aim for end of year thing.
That's it, yeah. Another end of year follow up. We'll see what we can decide on. What franchise deserves our reviewing talents?
Exactly. Well, Scott, it's been an absolute delight. Thanks again for coming on.
No, excellent. Thanks. I'll leave you to it.
And that's the end of the podcast. Thanks as always for tuning in, guys. As I said in the intro, the information for Scott's websites are in the show notes for 20thcenturygeek.com and 20thcenturygeek.com/timeandspacepod for the two podcasts that he hosts. As well as that, he also was on episode 75 of Genuine Chit Chat for a Star Wars discussion and on episode 89 for a wrestling talk. And as I said, myself, Scott and Megan are all going to be on the 20th Century Geek podcast in early 2021 when we release the Batman retrospective. As I said, it's all going to be on the 20th Century Geeks feed, so make sure you go and subscribe to that, and we will be tackling basically the main Batman films, the four ones from the late 80s and 90s, Batman 66, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and then the Dark Knight trilogy as well. So, you know, make sure you look out for that. We've recorded part one of that already, and we had loads of fun. Megan hadn't really seen any of the Batman films before, except I think Batman Begins and Dark Knight, and I'd only seen the other ones like once when I was really young, so I can remember like snippets of it, and Scott is a massive fan of them and watches them quite a lot. So it's really interesting to get the perspective of almost what I've deemed as the newbie, the novice, and the nerd about Batman stuff. So I'll be sure to share that on social media and stuff, so make sure you follow me at Genuine Chit Chat and all those usual places. And if you aren't already subscribed to 20th Century Geek, go do that, because it's amazing. And his other podcast, Stories Out of Time and Space, is also amazing, as he mentioned at the end here. So, you know, lots of cool nerdy stuff to get into if you really enjoyed this chat. There's plenty of times I've had like loads of other nerdy chats and things on. Just check out the back catalogue, or potentially go on YouTube. I put all the podcasts in playlists and things. Barely anyone listens on YouTube, and that is fine. That's not the main medium that I expect my audience to listen on. So if you go on there and see the views are minuscule, don't be too shocked, because my numbers are fine. It's just on YouTube, no one really listens. But I have still organized them into playlists. There's some that are a bit more nerdy chats, there's some about science, ones about movies, there's ones a bit more serious. It just kind of depends what you fancy. Or you can just reach out to me on social media and say, hey, I fancy this kind of podcast, do you have a recommendation? And I'll get back to you as soon as I can. So coming up, I haven't got any episodes recorded. I'm kind of doing it by week in a sense. I've got a podcast due for recording this week coming about a gentleman who is making a fan film of the Green Lantern. And I'm getting Steve from the Superheroes for Dummies podcast to come and co-host with me because he knows far more about Green Lantern than I do. So I'm really excited about that. And then the few subsequent weeks after that, I've got a couple of collaborations with other people and things coming up, but I won't sort of speak about them until I kind of come to it. And really, for the time being, the only other things to mention, aside from me being on the recent Scott Pilgrim vs. the World on the TV and Reviews podcast, on the Comics and Motions feed, and lots of the other sort of collaborations I've been doing, I've included them in the show notes, so you can go check them out as well. And also, I've got my other podcast, Star Wars Comics and Canon, that airs on the feed of Comics and Motion, and Comics and Motion now has a different podcast show on nearly every day of the week. Tony Farina, who's a regular collaborator and friend of mine, he's got Indie Comic Spotlight on there. There's Superheroes for Dummies, which has Dan, Steve, and Paul, and as I said, Steve from Superheroes for Dummies is coming on the show. There's What's the Topic, there's the TV and Movies show, there's a new show coming out soon, which I'm not going to talk too much about. There's just lots of cool shows on there. Comics on Trial is another one where I defended the Phantom Menace against Scott Weatherly, and the judge of that was Paul from Superheroes for Dummies. And then also me and Tony Farina are going to be recording a Star Wars Rise of Skywalker Comics on Trial, where I'm going to be prosecuting the Rise of Skywalker and Tony's going to be defending it, and the glorious Megan is going to be the judge of that. So lots of cool things to look forward to as coming up as well. I have got a prolific Star Wars author hopefully coming on the show at the start of December. I don't want to name drop because I don't want to say that until the episode's kind of in the bag, as it were, but we have got it scheduled for recording, so fingers crossed that will all go ahead. And as I said, my other show, Star Wars Comics and Canon, on the feed of Comics in Motion, I talk about comic books that are related to Star Wars, as in the canon from 2014 when Disney took over and did the new canon. I've done stuff about Darth Vader, Dr. Aphra, how Kylo Ren got his lightsaber, Darth Maul. I did one episode all about Count Dooku, just kind of explaining his biology of what he, essentially not biology, biography of what he's basically been up to. So it was like at the start, who he trained, why he kind of fell to the dark side, all sorts of other things like that. I tried to kind of summarize because there's lots of Dooku-centric content. I've done the Journals of Old Ben Kenobi, which is his time on Tatooine. I recently did one about Yoda before the Phantom Menace, because there's a cool storyline about him learning new force powers and whatnot, which is good. The Galaxy's Edge stuff, which is relating to the theme park in America, or the theme parks in America. Lots and lots of different connections and things, as well as, at the moment, there is a weekly Mandalorian show where we basically talk about the Mandalorian as a wrap-up and things. In the first two episodes, it was Chris and Dave talking about it. In the second episode, although they spoke about it, I recorded a little snippet to go in there just to kind of connect some of the dots they may not have connected because they haven't seen Clone Wars or Rebels and aren't into Star Wars like I am. Episode 3, which should be out in the next couple days, that's going to be with Scott. For this, once again, is going to be with Scott, and then Chris is going to be doing it, and I've recorded quite a chunky nugget of information about one of the specific characters that pops up in Mandalorian 2, and then also in Episode 4, of The Mandalorian, which will be out next Friday, I'll be recording an episode with Dave to talk about that as well. So lots of Star Wars centric content on the Comics and Motion feed, but also stuff about indie comics, Marvel, DC, discussion shows, all kinds of amazing shows that really culminate together to make, in my opinion, the perfect comic podcast, because from what I can tell, we cover all bases except one little field that we haven't yet covered, which is going to be a new show coming out soon, which that'll get announced in due course. But yeah, that's really it for me, guys. Thank you, as always, for listening to my shows. I do very much appreciate it, especially you guys on Twitter who have been blowing hot air up my arse, if I'm being blunt about it, but in a really good way. You've been conflating my ego in some ways, saying I'm doing a great job and you love listening. And I've heard a few new listeners who, due to some of the recent collaborations that I've been doing, have been first-time listeners to the show. I really appreciate any of you guys listening. If you want to keep sharing on social media, if you want to leave reviews on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere really that you listen to the show, that would be much appreciated. But spreading by word of mouth, spreading by talking to people, and just checking the back catalogue, seeing all the different people I've had on the show, it all contributes and helps, and it makes this passion project even more enjoyable. So just want to say thank you as always, guys. I hope you're all staying safe and everything with this crazy time that we're going on, regardless of where you are situated in the world. And yeah, just I wish you all the best, and I'll talk to you next week.